If you have a broken guitar, don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com. Joining me now, Congressman Mark Pocan, who had a real nail-biter of a race. Congratulations on your re-election. We were counting the votes till 2, 3 in the morning.
Thank you, Sly. Appreciate it and honored to be able to serve.
All right. You know, we've been doing a little bit of post-mortem lately. It's been a little difficult. In retrospect, do you have any thoughts on how this could have come to a different conclusion?
You know, there's so many things. It's so easy to look back, but you can't actually affect them at the time. I mean, clearly, everyone, even Donald Trump, was surprised that he won on election. And, you know, that tells us things like modeling and polling matter, and we've got some work to do around that. You know, I think when you look at the nominee and her messaging and when it comes to the fact that she spent more money in Omaha, Nebraska than she did in Wisconsin and Michigan combined, you know,
oh!
Stuff is easy to say later.
That's not good. I didn't know that number. Woo!
You know, Real Press put it out, and then I didn't believe it myself, and we checked it, and it appears to be correct that more money was spent for the single electoral college vote, because they split their votes out, than what they spent in Michigan and Wisconsin combined. And, of course, we all know she never came post-primary, and even pre-primary she wasn't here a whole lot.
You know, it's
a lot of things that you can point to, but, I mean, in the end, I mean, this was something that no one credibly can say they predicted. Not a single pollster, not a single candidate. And I think, you know, because of that, we just need to learn why that happened and what we need to do differently based on that.
Well, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise. George Herbert Walker Bush won Michigan in 1988. Michael Dukakis won Wisconsin. But Al Gore and John Kerry won Wisconsin very narrowly. Wisconsin should never be taken for granted.
Absolutely not. I mean, we are definitely a purple state, and the fact that
not as deep a purple as I would like. The hue seems a little off right now.
Well, usually we're indigo blue purple. You know, in a presidential year, and maybe a little the other way on the 2018 and off year cycles. But you know, I think what struck out, what really I think I've looked at the strongest lie is. Kenosha, as you know, is my hometown, and you know, grew up there. Still know a lot of people down there. Barack Obama won it by Kenosha County by 13 points, and Trump won by one. That's a pretty big shift. But those are people who, you know, 3 decades ago made $20 an hour, and now they can make $13 an hour at the Roundy's or Amazon distribution centers. So if your kids are making less than your parents, and your parents can't make what they once did. They feel like no one's had their back for the last 3 decades, and they went for the guy with easy answers who sounded very confident, and I kind of understand that. And I think that that's the voter we shouldn't have lost. I think this myth of a monolith of the rural white male voter is a myth, and there's about 5 different voters that make that up. But I think you got to look at what voters we never should have lost, and how do you bring them back?
You know, it's interesting, and some of it obviously I don't know how many people in Kenosha County flipped from Obama to Trump. It'll be interesting to see those numbers when they're able to kind of call them out. But what's more devastating is the blue-collar worker who just stayed home. And
yeah.
Or, you know, and by the way, we should never lump just all blue-collar workers into white. There are a lot of African-American workers in Wisconsin that worked in factories
that stayed home
as well. And, you know, Donald Trump is such a crass guy. He's like, I want to thank the black people who stayed home. I mean, I can't believe he said it, but he said it. You know, we've got to, we can't, and it's just not about messaging. And I know you care about this. We got to find a way to make a difference in people's lives. And this cabinet that Trump has picked, boy, it's antithetical to everything he campaigned on.
Well, and, you know, I saw a graphic of the next 12 people in succession to be president should something happen. And with the exception of one person who hasn't been nominated yet, the Secretary of Agriculture, which is somewhere in the lower half of the succession line, they are all white males and increasingly old, wealthy white males in that succession line. And it's just such a difference from where we were with Barack Obama, or go back decades of different presidents. You know, this is about, you know, the line I like to say is, you know, he promised to drain the swamp, but in reality, he just built a high-rise luxury condo on it. And
well,
you know, these are all his cabinet picks, are these billionaires, multimillionaires, Wall Street royalty, and you know, it's not exactly what he promised.
Now, on a personal note, have you gone and exchanged your U.S. currency for rubles yet? Can you do that at U.S. Bank? Which one can you convert those rubles into, and what's the exchange rate right now?
I'll tell you, you know, this, it gets more and more interesting. You know, we're finding that, you know, some of the DCCC Democratic congressional candidates were also hacked and information used from that. And then just to see McConnell, I mean, absolutely refusing to do any kind of review or study of this when, you know, people like John McCain and others are very clear that this is something that we have to do an investigation on. But the fact that they don't even want to look at it because they're afraid they know the answer already, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, this is going to be a place in history where I think we're going to have a lot of decisions that have to be made from, you know, having a foreign power come in and influence an election. You know, I've heard people say this is the kind of political equivalent of 9/11, and it is. And that's something that we've really got to get a handle on.
Well, don't you think we should know what Paul Manafort was doing? I mean, Paul Manafort was you know, had Viktor Yanukovych, the puppet president in Ukraine, as a client. Now, Viktor Yanukovych turned his turned guns on the people of Ukraine in Kiev. Brutal. I don't know if you've ever seen the footage of this. People peacefully demonstrating with guns turned on them. And look, he was overthrown, but Ukraine's paid a huge price for this. These are bad people.
Yeah. No question. And, you know, for anyone to try to now rewrite into history the fact that, you know, Russia is not an entity that has been, you know, have an adverse relationship to the United States. I mean, we've got to take a look at this and take it for real, not, you know, we're fighting with what they're doing in Syria. It's running counter to our objectives. We've got this across, you know, in Crimea and all these other spots. I mean, this is not a country that we should be pals with at this point in time with who their current leadership is, and the fact that Republicans seem to be now having a new view of Putin is really amazing, because I don't think the American public is going where the Republican elected officials are.
Chuck Todd from Meet the Press has really been, I don't know why, but he's just over and over and over again, he is bashing the reelection of Nancy Pelosi and the House leadership with Steny Hoyer and James Clyburn. He's really been on the war path about this. You supported Speaker Pelosi, but I'm also sure that you are friends with and like Tim Ryan as well. Kind of give us your thoughts on that situation.
Yeah, you know, I think, as we said earlier, you know, it wasn't that Nancy Pelosi lost the election for Hillary Clinton or for the Senate or for anyone else, right? So anyone saying that the problem was Nancy Pelosi is just ignoring what the real problem is. So we, first of all, you know, we got to keep working on what the real problem is, which was the voters we lost that we shouldn't have, and how you get people out to vote who should have so that we could have won. But, you know, there's no question our leadership team is significantly older than the Republican leadership team, but, you know, at the same time, Nancy Pelosi is an extremely talented leader, and Tim Ryan is a great guy. I've worked with him on a lot of trade stuff. I think he might be running for governor in Ohio, and this certainly was helpful for him, I think, in that run. But, you know, the numbers were not there to turn out Nancy Pelosi, and, you know, it was never really a real race to begin with. So, you know, she didn't do anything that affected the end election. She's very progressive, and I think a lot of the alternatives that come in are not going to be as progressive. You know, I was glad to support her in her reelection bid.
So, yeah, and look, I mean, it's not like she doesn't understand that you've got to have a diversity in the House on the Democratic side, because not all of America is exactly like San Francisco. She's done that before. I didn't agree with Rahm Emanuel on trade, but Rahm Emanuel understood when he was recruiting candidates for Congress that he recruited a lot of candidates that disagreed with him on trade. I think they get it. I think the Democrats paid a big price for the Affordable Care Act in 2010, and the more I think about it, winning the presidential election in 2008, right after the Great Recession struck, for some reason, we got stuck with that thing, and it almost would have been better losing that election.
You know, if it was only about politics, you're right, Sly, but I'm much happier that we're the ones who made the decisions and did some of the funding.
No, because in some respects, they saved the country.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and unfortunately, it was such a deep, deep hit in 2008, and much more than I think people ever understood, in the fact that people's wages have still been flat on top of all the other structural things around trade and other stuff, and doesn't help when you have a sitting president who's the main Democrat in the country having a different trade message than the Democrats running for the House and Senate, right, because that adds confusion. And Hillary Clinton could be a bit more eloquent than saying, I don't support the TPP as currently written. Yeah. Somehow that just will never be a lyric in a song.
Yeah, somebody. I have a feeling somebody was tapping on her shoulder at breakfast.
Probably. But, you know, in the end, I mean, there are a lot of little things, I think, like that, that hopefully we've learned out of this. I mean, to me, you know, we have to be very clear on what our economic message is, and that economic message has to be one that supports people in my hometown of Kenosha. And their wages have been flat. They've lost jobs in a lot of manufacturing and other jobs because of bad trade deals. And we need to be crystal clear on where we are on this. And even though over 80% of the Democrats were there who voted in Congress on TPP and things like that, that wasn't what the message of the election came out to be.
Well, that's for sure.
And you know, Donald Trump, for him to be then the savior of the working man, when now he's just filled the cabinet with billionaires and multimillionaires and a bunch of Wall Street folks, you know, is exactly not what he promised. Or I think
He's making his goods overseas, I don't think enough attention was paid to that. I don't think enough attention was paid to all the contractors that he hasn't paid over the years. I mean, this man is an ethical nightmare. I assume you don't stay at his hotel when you're in Washington.
No. Although it won't be his hotel for long, possibly. That's going to be the other interesting thing. I mean, we've got more issues. The fact that today was the day he was going to announce his disconnection to his business enterprise, and now he's postponed that. I think he's realizing that this is not as easy as he thought he could do when he first started running for president. And, you know, we're all going to have to live through this transition.
Congressman Mark Pocan with us at Sly'sOffice.com. He, of course, was recently reelected to his third term in the House of Representatives. You know, the TPP has been stopped. That's a good thing. Where do you see this going? Obviously, Paul Ryan has been drinking expensive wine with the Heritage Foundation and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce over the years pushing these trade deals.
Yeah, but now we know why, because he is a fine wine.
Yes!
a little longer to get used to him, according to Donald Trump. So now we understand why he likes that $350 bottle of wine.
So Donald Trump claims he doesn't drink, so I'm not really sure how he would understand what a fine wine would taste like. But that said, where do you see this trade issue going?
Well, you know, right now, we don't know yet with the Trump administration. I mean, you know, from the very first pick, the day he announced Reince Priebus, the ultimate Republican insider, and Steve Bannon, the ultimate, you know, white nationalist, what does that tell you in a consistent message of what he's going to govern? I don't think we really know. We know what he said he believed about trade, but let's face it, the mainstream of the Republican Party doesn't agree with him on those issues. Is he going to let Mike Pence, a free trader, and Reince Priebus, a free trader, make the decisions ultimately because that's not what he ran to do or not? I don't think we know, Sly, and that's part of the problem. Right now, we're just glad that a lot of work by a lot of people over the last couple of years have killed the TPP in its current form, And now we've got to make sure that they don't come up with some new trade bill that's the same stuff. We've got to make sure that we're really going to have a different trade policy, and I think we need to probably put forward our own positive vision, which we have, but I think we need to reiterate that again.
Well, Donald Trump promised to renegotiate NAFTA. Do you really see Paul Ryan passing legislation that opens up NAFTA for negotiation? Donald Trump can't do that on his own.
Absolutely not. See, that's the thing. And so all those promises, again, were false promises because they're not reality. And, you know, a lot of his picks already don't exactly represent where he said he was. He's
already really?
Backpedaled on other things from the Affordable Care Act to putting Hillary in jail, to everything else in between. I think the biggest question we have is we really don't know until after he's sworn in on January 20th what he's going to lead with, although I assume early in January when we're in, we'll start seeing some of the bills they put forward. But, you know, we've got a very heavy calendar, January through March. They're expanding the week by a day that we're going to be out there. They've expanded the number of weeks. They think they're going to do a bunch, but as you and I both know, I mean, governing is a lot harder than I think they're making it out to be when you've got a Republican Party and a president that may not agree on all issues.
So this is an interesting situation. We have some jobs coming back to America. But when manufacturing jobs come back to America, often they're not paying very great wages. The Department of Labor is going to be turned into the Department of Management with Mr. Trump's pick. Mr. Puzder is obviously about as anti-worker as you can possibly get. Donald Trump's record as a businessman is very anti-worker. We know what he's done in Las Vegas. We know he hasn't paid immigrant workers from Poland. We know he's just a bad hombre when it comes to paying workers. How can you improve an economy if you don't improve wages?
Well, and you know, I think another thing that to bring it home, if I can, because we know a lot of the Republicans don't even believe in a minimum wage that he's appointed. I don't know if you saw it, but the organization that Sean Duffy's wife is affiliated with just came out for getting rid of the minimum wage. So we may have Sean Duffy, who's kind of cozied up to Donald Trump, be one of those advocates for getting rid of the minimum wage as well. And that's going to be coming out of Wisconsin, where, again, I think everyone knows better on this issue. So we're expecting lots of fights on the labor front and on the education front, tax front, and healthcare. I mean, those are all things we anticipate will be coming pretty fast and furious in the first few months of next year.
You don't really think they'll eliminate the minimum wage, do you?
Well, I don't know. Will they come up with some kind of a different way of doing it that you could effectively get rid of it in some cases? I could see that happening. If you get rid of it in some cases, that's the whole reason you have it, right? Because some industries and some businesses don't want to pay it. I think a statistic I saw, and I can't get pull it up right now, but it was that something like 85% of businesses already are paying over $10.10 an hour. It's the 15% that aren't that we're really trying to affect when you try to raise the rate, plus you have other ripple effects. So if they find some way to effectively get rid of it because they do it in some industries, and those are the industries that are abusing it, you have gotten rid of the minimum wage. And you're going to have further depressing then of people who make that level already. They're not going to have the same push to have that increase.
Now, I know you you hang out a lot in Washington with Congressman Tom Price.
Yes, often. You know, it's that whole Georgia thing I've got to be.
He's a real piece of work. What do you foresee happening with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security?
So we know that Medicare is definitely something they're going to go after. If you do that, you're probably going to look at Social Security, although I think that one's a bit harder for them. Medicaid, we could see a rollback as they do the rollback on the Affordable Care Act. But, Price is the chair of the Budget Committee, which I serve on, and he had a panel on the future of healthcare. And one of his picks for the panel was this guy from, Oklahoma, I think it was, who has this health clinic where the prices of everything are posted on his website, but it's not like really a place where you go for a heart attack. You go there for Botox or things that you would be price conscious of because they're not actually health related. And yet that's one of his examples of how we could reform healthcare, was to have that out there. I mean, this is a guy who's got ideas that are completely out of step with what I think anyone else would have on healthcare, and now he's going to be in charge of it for the country. So it's the big programs, which are going to be big fights, and more than just Tom Price. But Tom Price is a guy who believes in some pretty wacky ideas when you come to healthcare, period. And I think we're going to have to watch a lot of those real close.
Wisconsin politics. There's a lot of finger pointing right now. If you look at what happened in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Indiana and everything, it almost seems like there's a regional issue. Where do we start to rebuild?
Well, and that's where, I mean, I've always said, and I reiterate this as I sit down with people who are doing all these, like, what happened meetings since the election, is what people care about most is what you talk about at your kitchen table, is can you pay can you afford your mortgage? Can you send your kids to college? Can you take a family vacation? Can you maybe have one of those middle-class luxuries of a snowmobile or a boat or a camper, something like that? That's what real people think about. They don't think about all the politics that sometimes we talk about. They don't think about a lot of the other issues. Unless we're talking to that person, we're not talking to someone who should be our voter, because our messages are clearly, when it comes to economics, in the best interest of someone who's in the middle class or aspiring to be there. But I think, you know, we got lost on a lot of other issues that weren't around that, and I think we got to come back to it. So that's why I've always talked about trade. That's why we need to talk about things like wages and making sure that people can grow their paychecks. That's why we get to talk about things like pay equity and other issues like that. We should be talking about fundamental economic issues first, second, and third, and then we've got a lot of other issues that are important, clearly, but we've got to lead on what people actually care about the most, and that's core economic issues.
Well, give me an example where you thought somebody was using a message other than that. How you put things and how forceful it is obviously can make a difference as well. What sort of issues did you hear Democrats bring up that maybe you didn't think would resonate?
Well, I mean, you know, we talked about Zika funding a lot. I'm not guessing that too many people in the Rust Belt are worried about getting Zika. And that was a major thing that we talked about before we left in Congress over and over and over and fought over that issue. I just don't think that was the issue that, again, people talked about at their dinner table. And some of the other issues like that we put forward weren't core economic issues. I mean, quite honestly, trade should have been a core economic issue. And because the president had a different position than Democrats in Congress, we did our best to avoid talking about it. I think the fact that we mainly talked about, look, she's not Donald Trump, was probably not the best message we could have had. It didn't go back to, again, what it's about them. I think even, and this is one of those retrospect things, I'm not wild about using it, but I do fundamentally think this is a mistake. The whole hashtag, I'm with her, people want to know where you are with them, and I'm with her should have been more like she's with us or, something else, right? But, this was all about Hillary Clinton and not about the person who was the voter that we needed to get. All of those things I saw as lacking for where we should have been, and I hope that as we go into a new legislative session, not only do we fight the bad things, there's going to be plenty of bad things to fight, but we also put our own proactive agendas out there. What would our infrastructure package look like? What would our tax package look like? Let's put some, we don't have to get deep into details. Let's show the public what the differences are and what they're going to get with the Republicans and what they could have got, what they can still get with us in a couple of years.
Is Sean Duffy running for the United States Senate against Tammy Baldwin?
I think he wants to. I think knowing Sean Duffy, unless the table is set just perfectly for him, he won't do it. But he's certainly loving the idea and going on Fox News and all kinds of other places to try to get his name out there, hence the fight we had over calling Madison a communist town. I would hope that we would get a little more substance out of him before he decides he's ready to be U.S. Senator. I just don't think we've seen a lot of substance out of Sean Duffy.
It's obviously going to be a very expensive, tough race. Wisconsin, midterm-wise, hasn't had a good year for the Democrats since 2006. Can they make a comeback in 2006?
Yeah,
or in 2018?
18. Our greatest asset is Scott Walker. Scott Walker doesn't care about Wisconsin. He cares about how being governor can set him up to be president.
Well, now I think you're just being unfair.
I think I'm being accurate and truthful. And, you know, I think in the next budget, you know, he's already not going to fund a road and infrastructure. He's been very clear about that. He's so defunded education that even if he puts a few pennies back in, it's going to still have the same negative effects, especially in our rural areas where we're having schools lose up to a third of their teachers in a single year because of his policies. I mean, you look at broadband, and where I live right now, I'm at my house, and the neighbors down the road can't get the internet. I have a satellite system here, but that's an expensive system. But you can't even get internet in lots of parts of Wisconsin. And he gave back all that money. And even though now he's finally going to put a commitment in, if he had put in what he was given from the federal government years ago, we wouldn't have the problems we're going to have. And he still won't take on the big telecommunication companies. I think he is our greatest gift because he has not governed in a way that put Wisconsin first. Like I would argue, Tommy Thompson and Jim Doyle and Dolbeck, they're all the governors in both parties, always did. I may disagree with how they did it. Scott Walker's the first guy to not put Wisconsin first.
Well, somehow we have to find a way to get people to vote. And if I could go find the people that didn't vote in this election that were inclined to vote for Democrats, I'd like to just shake them to their core and say, do you understand what you have done? You know, I'll be honest with you. First of all, I think we ought to give Republicans a little credit for what's happened in this state. They're very devious and they're very good at what they do. I don't think it's just the Democrats have done dumb or bad things. But there's got to be some responsibility on voters to take part in democracy. And I know you as a politician and a congressman, you can't scold the voters, but I can. I mean, it's beyond my comprehension, Mark, knowing what's been at stake for the last 10 years in this state, that people aren't marching to the polls to save their schools, to save the environment, to save labor rights. Good God, what does it take?
Well, you know, there is a study that UW is doing in Dane County, and that's fine because, you know, if you've got someone who didn't vote in Dane County, even more so, why didn't they vote? Because we've been done a really great job of getting turnout out here. Let's figure out what it is. I mean, those are some of the questions I think we've got to be asking, too, is, you know, not just why do we lose some voters we shouldn't have lost? That's one thing. But what about the voters who should have been with us but didn't come out to vote? What was the reason? And how do we, was it because we weren't talking to them? I think that was a big part of it. But let's actually ask them and find out, because we can't keep doing this. They're going to keep suppressing the vote. We have to figure out how to break that cycle of suppression.
Well, that's one way to look at it. You could also give me the list of people that didn't vote, and I'll go pay them a little visit. You don't think that's a good idea?
Huh. No, I think my way's a little better.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, you let me know. Hand me the list. I'm ready to start knocking. Congressman Mark Pocan, thanks for coming on our podcast today.
Absolutely, Sly. Thank you.
Listen again for another podcast at SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.